Hi, and welcome to Sellers and Makers Podcast, a place artisans can come together in community, brought to you by Everything Embroidery Market. I'm your host, Hope Dale, and
I'm Christina Schulman, and today we have the privilege of talking with Miss Julie of Machine Embroidery Geek. Julie has a lot of wonderful ideas. We were just chit-chatting a little bit before we started recording, and I'm very fascinated to hear just kind of a little bit about you and how you got into the industry in general, if you don't mind kind of taking the reins there.
Well, it's funny. I'll try to give you the Reader's Digest version.
Okay.
But I've gotten to a point in my life where I see like all of these areas of interest that are kind of cycling back on each other. I mean, my training is, I was an engineering major, but then I did a master's in apparel design and I have an MFA in design. So I was much more interested in the hands-on making as opposed to, you know, building a bridge where I was like working on a project for 10 years and writing an environmental impact report on it. So I really wanted to have my hands in the things that I made and the things that I do. So I am now currently, my main job is I'm a professor of interactive media at a university in St. Louis. And I've always been interested in blogging too. I just really like this idea of creating content and answering people's questions and seeing where that could lead to. So I started this blog, Machine Embroidery Geek, like in 2010, which is ridiculous, but that it's been so long. And I was really at the time very interested in digitizing an embroidery because I had just gotten an embroidery machine. And having had this background in apparel and in graphics, and you know, this connection between the computer and stitching was just so fascinating to me. And I'm like, I want to know how to do this. So I thought, well, if I force myself to write about it every day, then I'll learn it, right? I mean, eventually I'll figure this out.
Yes.
But after a couple of years, you know, I did figure out how to digitize and some interesting things happened. I connected with the people from Creative Machine Embroidery Magazine and started writing for them. But for the most part, what I had was a blog that was all about, you know, and another thing about me and another thing. And I did this and me and me and me. And that's not why people go to blogs. You know, people are going to blogs to get their questions answered and they're looking for help and inspiration. So that sort of dawned on me, oh, maybe 5-10 years later, where I was like, you know, I think there could be a real gem in this, where I switched the focus of this blog to be about how can I answer other people's questions about machine embroidery. So it was really just kind of rethinking how I approached it. And so that was probably about 2019. And ever since then, I've just been growing the blog through the help of a blogging course that I took that really helped give me a framework for how to actually make a profitable blog.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where I am. And now that the blog has an audience and I'm getting questions from people all the time, sometimes that I can't answer, a lot of times that I can't answer. I've been thinking about, you know, what kind of classes and products can I make to help my audience? So that's kind of where I am with it.
Yes. And you've talked about growing your blog. I mean, Hope and I spent a little bit of time before we reached out to you and, mm-hmm. You have a huge, just a wide variety. It's not just one thing that you talk about. How do you come up with your different topics? Because there's so many.
Yeah, that's a good, a lot of ideas come from Facebook groups. You know, right. What are the questions that people are asking in those groups and how can I answer them? And now that I've written so much, I feel like I can respond to those questions in a non-spammy way because people are looking like, hey, does anyone know why my bobbin thread is showing on top? I'm like, yeah, I've actually written about this. Here you go. And it's helpful and not like, you know, I think it's helpful. It's not being annoying about it. So that helps a lot. I mean, this whole keyword research process, which is a whole aspect of blog writing, is to see, well, what are the keywords? What are people asking about? Like, for example, one keyword that I know people are searching for is handheld sewing machines. Now, those things are a piece of junk from what I understand.
But totally a piece of junk.
But I feel like I need to.
I know this.
And so I'm like, I don't really want to, I bought one. I don't really want to test it out because I know it's going to be frustrating, but I do know that it probably would yield traffic to my blog if I actually just wrote about it. So it's kind of those kinds of things. And sometimes I just want to make something, and those posts don't tend to get a lot of traffic, but they tend to be the most fun because, you know, I just want to make something.
You're doing something you wanted to do and you're telling people about it. Exactly. But I will say, in college, one girl, we were trying to do a costume or something for a swap. And one girl had bought one of those handheld sewing machines. And I ended up, she was trying to get me to help her, which I was trying to. I'm like, this is a piece of junk. Yeah. And I ended up hand stitching it. But I was just like, this is, I don't know if they've gotten any better, but I do know that particular one.
It was terrible.
Like, it didn't even feel like, it felt like basically a stapler, except a stapler sturdier.
That's what people have said. That's what I've read. Yeah. Well, anyway, so it's definitely a balance between like what people are searching for and what, you know, what you want to write about. And some of the stuff that, some of the stuff is just like comes right out of me. Like I could talk about e-commerce for, you know, till the cows come home because I've built so many websites. But some of it really requires me to dig in and do some research.
What website, platforms do you like?
Yeah, well, I really like, I've built e-commerce sites from scratch. So that is, I wouldn't recommend doing that for anybody, but the particular projects required interface, very custom features, and required interfacing with other systems. But the most of the sites that I build now that are e-commerce are using WooCommerce and WordPress. But I mean, Shopify is awesome. I mean, if people just want to get started quickly, Wix, Weebly, I wrote a post about this and was surprised. There's a couple of them where you can actually start selling and like are on a free account. So I think that's a pretty great deal.
Yeah.
But WooCommerce can be a little tricky, you know, to set up if you're not particularly tech savvy, but that is completely free. You know, WordPress and WooCommerce is the cheapest way to go if you want to have an e-commerce site.
And there's tons and tons of add-ons and things if you think you need it, but you don't necessarily need it to get going. My Cotton's very first site was a WooCommerce site.
What are you using now?
So we're actually on BigCommerce now.
Oh, okay.
And it is much more expensive. When we very first were looking to open Love That Cotton and we were trying to get the website built, I'd never done anything besides just be on the internet, right? I'd never done anything on the backside. And we had a friend of a friend, I guess, who was like, I can build you a site. And it was absolutely gorgeous. Now, this person did a bunch of hard coding into our WooCommerce site, which slowed down as the updates came out. The hard coding didn't change with the updates. And it just made our website so incredibly slow that our bounce rate was like through the roof. And I don't blame them. You know, you go to a site, you type in something, and then you're like, is it even loading? Is it loading? Is it loading? Oh, wait, yes, it is. But it was beautiful. And at that point, because the bounce rate was so high, we were just trying to find something else that we could convert to sales quicker, you know? And so we did some as much research as I could, as far as the different platforms. We ended up with BigCommerce. Hope and I have talked so many times. Is it the best? I mean, I don't know that there is a best.
What works with you the best.
At this point, everything's on there. Now our Everything Embroidery website is a WordPress site. And, you know, so, and my husband has several businesses. One of his is a WordPress site as well. So at this point in my journey, I have a lot more experience. And I agree with you that there's so much you can do with WordPress.
Oh, amazing compared to like 20 years ago, you know, when the idea of building e-commerce, it's the challenge though is you can build it, but you got to get people to come. You know what I mean? The e-commerce part is not the hard part. The traffic part is the hard part. So that's why this whole idea of building, starting with content, you know, you're getting people coming and then rolling out the products to your audience is sort of, that's the business model that I'm following.
Yeah. And that works.
Well, people get to, they get to know you, you know what I mean? They know you and they like, if they like you and I mean, some people don't like you and they unsubscribe, like take me off 1 week. Oh my gosh. It was like haters. I when people sign up for my mailing list, I send them, you know, a checklist of things to think about before you start embroidering. And then here's a free design. And it's like my favorite scribble flower. And I use it for my logo. And somebody wrote back, this is hideous, even for free.
And you're like, okay.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, what is the point of saying that to somebody besides making them feel terrible?
I don't understand the people that just feel like they can say anything behind their keyboard. I don't get it. Like if you wouldn't say it to someone's, like, where is it getting you? Like,
I know.
Does that make you feel better by saying that? Or like, especially if it was something that was free.
Exactly.
So why even say something? You don't have to use it.
Right. Well, like, my blogging mentor said, celebrate your unsubscribes. These were not your people to begin with. So if they want to unsubscribe from your newsletter, great. Let them unsubscribe. You'll get more people that like you. And so it got funny that week when I was getting all my hate mail. It was just like, it came in 3 or 5. I'm like, oh.
Everybody was sleeping on that hater aid.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, your mentor's right too. Cause they're, no matter what you do, if you're doing something big, someone's going to support you and someone's going to not. And the more you can surround yourself with the positive people, not only more fulfillment are you going to find from it, but those, you will, I don't know. I don't even know where I'm going with this thought, except I want people that are listening to just know that yes, you'll have those people, but if you can let it roll off your back, you'll be able to continue and you'll grow from it. You know?
Yes. And you also have to keep it in perspective. You're getting one person who says something rude over like the 5,000 people that you've also sent it to. And so you have to keep the few comments in perspective with all of the other people that are happy and appreciative. So I tell myself that, don't let yourself get deterred by like one negative thing. And sometimes you'll make some stuff. I'll make some designs and it's really freaking ugly. And that's like, and you know what? It's just not all of them are going to be winners.
Yeah. I mean, that's anything. I mean,
yeah.
And yeah, I mean, you can't just, it's a glass half full analogy too. Like you can't think about all of the other people, the few people that are being negative when there's so many people that are positive, or you know, just they continue to subscribe, and not everybody will open every email.
No.
And you know, sometimes life just gets you. And then, you know, this one looks interesting. I'm going to open that one, but I didn't open the rest of them. I just deleted them or whatever. Right. Like, you know, you have all different people. And yeah, I definitely try to not look at the negative, unless it's actually like constructive criticism. But I feel like there's a difference in constructive criticism and then just being mean.
Right. Yeah. 100%. Keep pushing forward.
That's right. Okay. So I want to circle back a little bit because I wanted to touch base on this because I think it's interesting. You were talking about keyword research. And I think as creatives, a lot of people get so focused on, I'm creating this, whether it's because I like it or my customer wants it, or I heard someone may like it, or I just want to try something new, that they forget that if they focus on the keywords, they can do maybe a little bit better job steering their company to where it's more successful. So you work smarter and not harder, and you can then provide the product that people actually want. but you don't know what they want unless you search. So how did you get into that keyword research, and what does that process look like for you?
Oh, well, you know, for building a blog, I think it's a little bit different than building like creative products. So if like a friend of mine, she makes, you know, embroidered onesies and hats and, you know, that she does this kind of stuff. So for somebody like her, I don't know if her customer is being driven, differently than somebody who finds my site. Right. So for me, that type of research looks like there are tools. There's a course that I've taken. It's called Stupid Simple SEO. And I basically followed whatever they told me to do. And I used a product called Ahrefs, which is an expensive tool, but you used to be able to get a 7-day trial. Now there are other tools you can use. And I just went through and you put in, you know, your site, and then it tells you that are comparable sites, and these sites are ranking for this keyword, and it makes suggestions like that. So there are tools you can use, or just going to Google. You know, you type how to embroider on, and then Google suggests onesie, towels, you know, all of those things. And so you probably want to have those kinds of articles out there. Yes. So, I mean, keyword research is important if you're writing content and you want people to come to your site, or like if you're selling very specific products like what you're selling. But I think for people that are making just embroidered or printed items, sometimes people don't know they want it until they see it, which is why I think social media is annoying in a lot of ways, but you know, Instagram and Pinterest are so powerful for the creatives, because people see it and they're like, oh my God, I didn't know that that existed. They would have never thought to search for it. You know what I mean? So if you have a business like my friend Ellie, you know, constantly posting on Instagram what you're making, then people, your friends, your family, that growing audience starts to see it like, oh my God, that's the perfect baby gift. And they would not have searched for it.
Right.
So I think it's a different tactic depending on what kind of business that you're in. And I know a lot of people sit back and say, I don't do social media, it's annoying. And I agree. Like, I can't stand to read another one of those Facebook posts that's like, Bahamas didn't disappoint, blah, blah, blah. It's just so stupid and so, you know, annoying. But it can be a very powerful marketing tool if you're a creative.
100%. I mean, we talk about this a lot. If you're going to take the time to post on social media,
yeah,
make sure that you spend the time to take a good picture. Mm-hmm. You know, your photography matters. If they can't touch it and feel it, you need to make them feel like they're touching and feeling it just by your picture. You know, bright, and you know, you want it to be pretty. You want to present it in the best light. If it's not on social media and it's on your website, you can do some of those.
Here's a question for you. Do you guys have a photography class at EEM?
We do.
Oh, that's good.
We do. And it's always, so I only went to this show in Chattanooga, was my first show, but I know that they had it in, let me let her in. I know that they have it in Biloxi as well. And it was Cassidy with Sewing Seed. She does the photography class, and she is really good at flat lays and really just making the whole picture together. Mm-hmm. So yes, we have it at EEM, and a lot of the people that I have started following just because they're EEM people or LTC people, I see that they definitely use Cassidy's
her tricks.
Uh-huh. So I can tell a difference. And I mean, just as from a customer standpoint, I mean, the picture is key. If you're not selling in person, I mean, it's huge. I mean, but even if you are selling in person, you merchandise. So a picture is the same thing. You're creating a pretty picture, whether it's in person or online. Mm-hmm. You have to let them window shop.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been here like food bloggers. It's huge for food bloggers. The photography is so important. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I could always do a better job with that. But at least I like remove my background sometimes, you know, like at least I can clean up stuff in Photoshop. But, you know, your studio setting and all of that, and getting rid of shadows, and it's hard.
It all of this is hard, though. I feel like just there are so many aspects, and everybody has something that is maybe their weakness, right? Uh-huh. So maybe their weakness, but that doesn't mean you can't focus on another aspect, right? So maybe your strong suit's the keyword recognition, and making sure that all of that is all the way through your blog from start to finish in the titles mm-hmm. and everything. And Cassidy, her pictures, and maybe mine's the description, or maybe mine's the creation of product, and that's okay. I think find what you are strong at, and then make sure that that part is evident across your brand, whatever your company is, whatever your brand is, and then you can set some time apart for those things that maybe you're not as good at, just to try and get better, because we can always, always get a little bit better.
And working in a digital realm, you can always update it, you know?
Always, always, yes. And you should. I think sometimes websites will get stale because they'll put it up there and they'll forget that you can update it. You can change it. You can change that description. Maybe Google is now, the algorithm's changed, and something that was getting a lot of hits before is not now for whatever reason. And as a business owner, it's your responsibility to try to refresh a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. It's a rat race, which is why it's important to build your audience too, because, you know, I mean, at least even if some of my blog posts have fallen down in the search rankings, I still have my audience on my email list. They can't take that away from me. Yeah. Someone might come in and write a better article about that. And I should write, you know, get back on it and write a better one, but it's hard to keep up with. But at least if you have a base of people that you're communicating with, nobody can take that away from you.
Yes. So that's something that I've seen a lot of. Some people are like, you know, all my eggs are in the Etsy basket, or all my eggs are in the Facebook basket. All of them are on Instagram. And they're not taking the time to build an email list or build something. And that can be a scary thing, because what happens if that one thing goes away? Or, I mean, you know, that sometimes Facebook's down.
Yeah,
or you know, PayPal's down or whatever, then
And a lot of these platforms give a lot of power to the consumer. So, you know, there's something, I have something on Etsy, I have a different Etsy site about something different, but it's a Canadian customer and they didn't get their package. I see on my end, it was delivered. Mm-hmm. She keeps bugging me. Like, I'm like, I don't, how do you think I'm supposed to solve this problem? Really? You know, but if she complains to Etsy and Etsy kicks me off, like,
yeah,
you know, I'm about to mail her another one, you know, because I just feel like I don't want her complaining.
Yeah, I've had through Love That Cotton, there's been a few people that were only on Etsy, a few of our customers only on Etsy, and then they lost their Etsy shop, you know, and then they had to start from scratch completely because they didn't have that website or anything built up. And if that's completely gone, that's scary. Now, I will say I've had the pleasure of watching them take that, all their products, all their pictures, put it on a website and be surprised that they actually have been able to surpass their sales on Etsy, not have as high of fees, you know, Etsy's got some fees that have been going up and whatnot, but they were scared, and rightfully so, you know, that's a scary thing, a big change in your business, but they've been able to build it back up. And so again, just diversifying a little bit can help with that a little bit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, all of them.
I mean, I feel like on Etsy, the one thing, and it's why people open up on there, is because they have their built-in customer base. But if you can take those people and, you know, most people on Etsy, or it seems like a bunch of shops, they have their following. They're people that come back time and time again. And honestly, they would probably rather just buy it from you on your site if once you created that customer base.
Right. Well, I, you know, you asked about some of my business tips, and that was one of them. I think definitely embrace Etsy. You know, there are a lot of people that, you know, hate on Etsy because of the fees and all of that kind of stuff. But it's a great way to get started because you can trial balloon things. And if it doesn't work, don't sell it. but you also have to be smart about it by building your own following and then offering something that you can do again and again and again. So you're not retaking a picture for every onesie twosie that you're selling, yeah. You know, so you kind of have to be strategic about your product line, but it offers a great opportunity to reach an audience and see what works, see what people like, see what they don't like. So, I mean, I think it's a great tool for what it is. Yeah. They bring the customers to you.
Right. Every day.
I know.
It's, you know, they keep growing and there's a reason yeah. they keep growing. That's, to be honest, before our Blanks company, that's where the only place I sold, I guess, friends and family, Facebook, I guess, uh-huh. but uh-huh. it was Etsy. I didn't have a website before Love.com and uh-huh. it was Etsy. And that was the platform that gave me the confidence to be like, okay, I can move somewhere else. Yeah. I can do both. I can grow. And I think we've again talked about this on several different podcasts, but just start.
Mm-hmm.
Just start. And then it's going to be a journey. You know, you're going to right. be like, okay, that works, that doesn't work. And
I think I haven't actually tried out this theory. Okay. but my theory is that, like, if I were going into the business of making embroidered items, you know,
yes,
I think I would go in with a niche. Do you know yeah. what I mean? Like mm-hmm. not doing the same generic hats that everybody's doing, the same onesies. I would be like the nautical shop and just do everything that's like, you know, my Blanks would be all outdoor and boating related. I would do nautical flags. I would do like, because I think there's just so much noise out there. Like if somebody wanted to do a windbreaker with like somebody's initials and nautical flags, wouldn't you buy it from the nautical shop as opposed to, you know, Julie's embroidery? I mean, it yes. seems like you would feel, even though it really wouldn't matter, anybody could buy that windbreaker and stitch those designs. You'd feel like, okay, they know the nautical stuff. I right. don't know.
That's no, just, I agree. I agree. And they may find your listing, the nautical shirt, go yes. to your shop and they're like, oh, they also have a matching towel. Yes. I'm going to get both. And it's now a set. And then their boating friend was, where'd you get that? Oh, the nautical shop, because you stand out. And now you've created two customers who
yes.
bought more. So
yes.
I feel like just through like, because of course I also look on Etsy all the time. they have, I feel like I've seen some shops like that. Like, I feel like I've seen like princess shops and uh-huh. where they just specialize in like the princess embroidery or applique. And that's what they really hone in on.
Yes.
Just like,
because you can always open another Etsy shop if you want to yeah. expand, you know,
yeah. yep.
it's, I don't know. I think that's where I would start, is to try to come in with a niche. There's a couple digitizers, you know, so many people are making embroidery designs now. There are a couple of digitizers that are super niche and seem to have been very successful. And I can't think of the name of the site, but she makes like files for stitching out like wings for your tennis shoes. She's got all sorts of weird wings for your, like how many wing in the hoop patterns are you selling? But apparently a lot, because if you want wings for your tennis shoes, you go there.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good place to start. And it also, I think as a creator, it sort of makes it a little bit less overwhelming, because you kind of, you know, you're defining sort of this niche, and then you kind of keep building products in that niche, as opposed to, I should do this. No, I should do this. I should do this. I should do that. You know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
No, 100%. So you mentioned a little bit ago that you have an Etsy shop. So we know you have the blog.
Yeah. You
have an Etsy shop.
Uh-huh.
What do you sell on Etsy? And do you have any other business?
Idea? Yes. Well, so my Etsy shop is really where I started selling designs. And I really have done a terrible job of taking my designs and updating my Etsy shop. I kind of ignore it, which I shouldn't, because now I have a VIP club, and so I release 9 designs every month. So I've probably grown my collection quite a bit since I've last updated my Etsy shop. And now I'm getting into fonts. And I kind of had the realization that, like, well, I could do a dragon applique design, but people are really going to be more excited about a cool font you know, and use it a lot more than a dragon, to be honest. But digitizing fonts is a ton of work. And once again, you know, you have copyright issues. You can't use somebody else's font and turn it into embroidery. So you have to be creative with what fonts you use. And so I don't know, I'm kind of steering away from your question, but that was that isn't really a big source of my business. Although now I'm realizing I just need to hire somebody to go take some of this stuff that I've made and put it on Etsy. And then also weirdly, I have an Etsy shop that's called Mod Patch. I make eye patches. Go figure. It's super random.
I'm like, okay, let's search.
I know. Now I'm going to look at it.
Yeah, it's called Mod Patch Eye Patch. Modpatcheyepatch.etsy.com, I think it is. So I make this ultra suede patch that sells a lot. It's crazy. I make so many of those dang patches. So I really should expand the product line because, but I can't sew fast enough. So I do have some help with sewing.
How did you start the eye patch? How did that?
Well, so my family's business is an optical supply company, and the vendor that they were buying the patches from, they were just really expensive. And I'm like, I can make these. And so then I started making them, and then now they order them through me.
Awesome.
And, I've had some help. We have a local nonprofit that teaches refugee women how to sew. And so sometimes I'll bring stuff for them, you know, to give them a skill when they come to this country. And so sometimes I bring it to them. I have some independent contacts through that organization too, who do some sewing work with me. So I kind of make them a whole pack, and then, you know, they can do it by the piece. They can do it at home. So I really need to foster more relationships with that. I think I overwhelmed one of my sewers. So I have to find more sewers. But
cool.
Thank you. So yeah, I have a lot of ideas of expanding that product line too. But now with EEM coming up, it's like I want to put my product creation energy into embroiderers and printers.
Yes. So if you guys haven't been able to check out the website, everythingembroiderymarket.com. Julie's actually coming to Everything Embroidery Market, and we're so excited that you're going to be able to make it. You are teaching several classes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that really fast. Okay, so you're going to be teaching, here it is, creating and editing SVG files.
Yeah, so in that class, I want to use free software so that anybody could create SVG files. And SVG files, if you're not familiar with them, they're a vector-based file format. So they're completely scalable, used all the time in the printing industry, and great for digitizing too, because programs like Embrilliance allow you to import SVG files, and that can be like a basis for your embroidery design. So how to make them is really what the focus is on this class. And there's a couple ways you can use them. And there's a free web-based software called Photopea, which is essentially Photoshop in a browser, which is amazing. And that's one of the tools we'll use. There's also Inkscape, which is another free vector-based drawing tool. And I think we'll look at one other one as well, but it's free resources. I don't want to get too into Adobe Illustrator because I know everybody doesn't have access to that, but hopefully there'll be skills that you could apply. Like if you did have Adobe Illustrator, you would understand, I could do it here too.
Yes.
So that's one of the classes.
Yes. And then you'll be teaching, website class.
Yeah. In e-commerce.
E-commerce. E-commerce mm-hmm. class.
Beginners.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, that's probably most in my wheelhouse since I've made so many websites, but just kind of thinking about where to register a domain name, what the SSL means, what are these different platforms and some of the pros and cons. And like what we talked about earlier with, you know, WooCommerce is great, but I've even made the mistake of putting custom code in and then, you know, you have to be very careful about that. So what's the easiest for beginners to use and what some of the limitations of these platforms are?
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I really think people are going to enjoy that a lot and enjoy that from someone that also has a in-depth knowledge of the embroidery world, because building a website for an embroidery shop or I guess a decorating shop, doesn't have to necessarily be embroidery, is different than many other sites, right? You have to, if you're offering customization, to be able to have those options on your website is important as a business owner, but that's, a lot of people struggle with that, right? So
yeah, well, yeah, I mean, there are definitely plugins that allow you to do that. And then some of these platforms offer it up front. So right. If you're not interested in trying to test out dozens of plugins on WooCommerce, then I would, and if that's definitely something you want to do and offer on your site, then I would definitely prioritize that before picking a platform.
Yes. And so I think they're going to really walk away just feeling excited and ready to take that next step. You know, I think, I'm just excited to see, because that's something we've heard over and over again. I want a website. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't even know how to get started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's overwhelming if you've never done anything like that before. And and for someone that you're already saying, like, just jump in and try it, or just, you know, just start. It's like, okay, but I'm trying to, and I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
So I think that would be super helpful.
Good. Well, it's important for me to keep in mind, like, I think about this day in and day out. Like, I dream sometimes in code. I mean, I'm not joking. Like, sometimes I solve coding problems when I'm out running or something. And I'm like, that's how, so you, not everybody thinks like that. So, I have to keep that in mind, which is, I think, why I'm struggling with the third class, which is the computer basics class. Yes. I'm like, well, what I'm trying to think about what people would be specifically having trouble with. And I know through my blog that I have a very popular blog post, which is just about downloading embroidery files off of a website and getting them onto your embroidery machine.
Yes.
So I think I'm going to survey my audience and ask them, if you were to attend a computer basics class, what would you be expecting to learn? What would you want to learn? And hopefully that will enlighten me.
No, and we've heard people just say, I bought this embroidery design. I don't even know how to unzip it. Yeah, I don't know how to unzip it. And once I've unzipped it, how do I get that on my computer to where I can find it again when I need it?
Yeah.
Just something as simple as that, you know, like they see that it's pretty, so they buy it. How do I keep that? What do I do with it after that? Just that is something that we've heard again and again, also through everything embroidery market. Just, you know, I'm taking these a little bit more complex classes, but I don't even know how to unzip.
Right.
So,
And we had asked, we did a survey after the show, and that was when people were saying unzipping, downloading, you know, just those very basic things. They're like, yeah, we're taking these harder classes, but we don't really even know how to do the beginner steps. So
yeah, I think I'm going to make a cheat sheet for that class too. Like where to look for your downloads, you know, and like what some of these things mean. Where are the common file formats? Here are some tools to convert them, some organization tools for being able to find files, or making aliases, you know, in different folders so you can find it, searching for a file. Things like that.
So no, 100%. That's there's a need for that. And I think too, one of the good things about an in-person class is you can leave a little bit of room for questions, right?
Right.
Someone's going to be in that class. You're going to say something and someone's going to be like, oh, wait, okay, so how do I do this? And obviously you're going to have a structure in the class, but some of that's really good, because if one person has that question, guarantee someone else in that class is going to have the same one, or a variation of it. So
I'm
really, truly excited about it, especially coming from you who knows the industry. I think people are going
to both worlds. And I think our attendees come ready to learn. And so they're there to ask questions and really interact in the class. I was just in the vendor class, or the
vendor panel,
sorry, last time. And I just loved how people's questions would piggyback and ping pong off of each other. And it was just like, oh, wait, you asked that question, but that reminds me, I have this question. Not to say the whole class is like that, but people are on fire during this. And they're just like, they're ready to learn. They're ready to take their business to the next level or even start the business. So they come like prepared and excited. And I think it's just, it's a really fun teaching environment when everybody's like there and ready.
Do they bring laptops usually?
So typically they will bring a laptop to our workshops, which are the Thursday. We can send out an email or something to them if that's something that you want your classes to have.
They're welcome to be able to try things out in class. I think that would be, I don't think as much for the e-commerce one, because that might not be the thing that they're like, okay, I'm going to set it up right now, you know, but I think the computer basics to be able to see it, and also the vector-based tools that might be helpful.
Yeah.
We can send out an email.
Yeah. We can always send out an email just to anyone who's signed up and say, hey, well, you don't have to, you're welcome to bring your computer. So
yeah, that sounds good.
I think that even if you don't have your computer, that's something that they will be able to take notes. Most people, that's what they do. They take notes in class, you know, pen and paper, whatever, or however they're taking notes. Maybe it's their phone. And then they take that home. And then I'm sure they'll be following you back to your blog. And they're like, wait, she said she, you know, did a write-up on this. And then
we can follow up that way. That's great.
Again, speaking about your blog, just circling a little bit, how do people contact you? So you will go and, you know, write up your deal. Do you email it out? Do you just post it on the blog? Do you have a group?
I just post it on the blog, and then I don't automatically email people that I have a new blog post. I do usually do like weekly newsletters, and if I update or write a new post that I think they might be interested in, then I'll kind of do a little feature about it. And then here's some related posts, and then, you know, some recommended products and, or in general announcements. So I try to email about once a week, and try to make it helpful, you know, just useful information.
Yeah.
So that's how they find it.
Hey, and okay. So you've been in business, you said, since 2010, right? Doing the blogging since 2010.
Yes, but I don't think, I mean, the blog wasn't really a business until about 2020, to be honest with you. I mean, it really wasn't earning any revenue of, I guess I did have designs on Etsy. And so those were making some money, but the blog didn't really become, you know, a revenue source until like the last year or two.
So I think that's encouraging to a lot of people, just hearing that you can do something just because you enjoy it. It doesn't necessarily have to be a business. You can do it just because you want to do it. And then you begin to perfect your craft. And if later on at any time you want to, you know, kind of change, just tweak a little bit and be like, you know what, I'm going to make this a business. You can do that.
And
you
I know. Yeah, well, okay, sorry. This is more about me, but I'm very interested in leather working. And there's a place in Chicago called Chicago School of Shoemaking. And I've taken some classes there, and it's just the coolest place. And the woman that owns it is awesome. But so a little plug for Chicago School of Shoemaking. You got to go check it out. Google it. And I made this, not there, but I bought an industrial sewing machine on Craigslist. It's a Kanso 225 from like probably World War II. It's like a beast.
Awesome.
And I made this leather suede purse, and it's fringed, and it has this very cool lining. And so I was in a store yesterday, a little boutique in St. Louis, and we were talking about purses. And I'm like, oh yeah, I made mine. And she's like, no, seriously, can we sell it here? And I'm like, oh God, I've got to get ready. Like, I can't take that on right now. Like, but yeah, my custom leather shop. Yeah, that's a future direction. I have a name for
it,
but it's not happening anytime soon.
Well, so, but that's funny though, because that's kind of how we found, I mean, amongst a lot of us, one little thing, one mention.
Yeah.
This kind of catapults you or completely pivots your direction just because it just happened to be that way, right?
Totally.
I mean, you said that you enjoyed that. You took the class and you think that place is really cool. But I don't know, were you thinking about selling it prior to her mentioning that?
Gosh, I mean, I had thought about, I like the idea of having this really cool brand of leather products. And I like the idea of it being like a local regional brand that people loved. You know, I love the idea of building a regional brand that you come to St. Louis, oh, you got to check out Arch City Leather. That they've got the coolest stuff and it's like all made in St. Louis and it's cool and it's modern and it's sort of hippie-ish. And so I just love that idea. And, but I'm not equipped to like take that on quite yet. I'm tempted to make like five or six and just put them on Etsy and see, but could I sell them for enough money that it would make it worth my while to make them? Because it was a COVID project making them.
A labor of love.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that, I mean, a lot of times people are like, I don't know that I could put an adequate price tag on what it took to make this.
Right.
Unless you just find out the perfect, you know, pattern that it becomes easy because you've done it so many times, right. But it's not really customized.
Right.
But well, that takes effort to do that. So,
right. I think I could get it down, you know, once I, but there was a lot of thinking involved in making this first version of this purse where I was like, okay, well, how am I going to get the seam without getting the fringe in the seam or having the lining not show here or there, you know, so there was a lot of thinking involved. Whereas, and now with the second draft, I'd be like, okay, well, I figured that part out.
Now you know.
Right.
But I think handcrafted things like crochet and knit, that is hard to put a price. There's so much handwork involved in those kinds of crafts that I think it'd be hard to put a price on that.
My mom hand smocks and hand makes baby items or, you know, and she always brings them to baby showers. And everybody's like, why don't you sell them? She's like, I can't put a price tag on that. It takes me too long. The seams are too tiny. Like, she's like, I only do it for people I love. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, I can't put a price on that. She's like, because nobody would buy it because it would be stupid how expensive it is to make it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen her put all of the labor into it.
Yeah.
So I 100% understand.
Well, yeah, that's the challenge of it. You have to come up with products that you can, like with my eye patches, for example, I had to figure out how to, I've ordered custom quilting dies, for example. So I just put them through my, you know, that machine that does all, I've ordered custom dies. So that's how I cut things out really fast is, you know, I roll them through my little, I can't even think what it's called. Ellison is the company that makes them, like what people do quilting pieces out of, but you can make custom dies for any shape you want.
Okay.
So that's how I cut my pattern pieces out so quickly. Like I tried with my silhouette cutter, you know, the, like a Cricut and it didn't like to cut the fabric that well. So anyway, figuring out how to make these things to scale. And that's kind of part of the fun part about these processes, to make something that's handmade, but also that's actually profitable in the end. I mean, that's the challenge.
Well, and I love what you're saying right there is just because it was hard doing it one way doesn't mean you can't figure out another avenue to have the same result, but now it's easier. And really that's one of the things that I love about Everything Embroidery Market is that's kind of the point. You can bring in so many experts in different areas in our industry who know some of those tricks, who want to share. And then, you know, I may be better at embroidery. You may be better at screen prints. And now, but I'm curious about screen prints and maybe I can merge the two or whatever it is. You know, I may not have thought about that, what you're doing to cut the fabric. I stopped at, I used my silhouette to cut my pieces and that didn't work and now it can't be done. So I love that just because you can't or you thought you couldn't, that doesn't mean there's not a better way or another
And
way.
There's a lot of value to talking about to people in other industries who don't necessarily know anything about sewing or embroidery, but like, my friend who runs the digital fabrication lab at a community college and I told him my idea and he sent me to this printer that had a huge Zund cutter and they couldn't get through the fabric. And then I don't know, it's just trying things, which can be kind of, can be really frustrating, but it's also research and development. That's what you're doing, you know? And sometimes you can't find a solution, but sometimes you can.
I think a lot of times you can if you keep trying, right?
Yeah.
It's, you won't find a solution if you just stop.
Right. It's the fun of being a maker, I guess.
Yes.
It's fun to solve a problem. I mean, I know I always, like, when you finally get it, like when you finally figured out how to do your die cut on the Ellison machine, like,
yeah,
you must have felt like success. Like, I don't know, it's like natural endorphins, like you're pumped, it keeps you going, you're like, I can do this now,
right?
I don't know. That's how I feel. Like I have like a little parade for myself.
She does.
Yeah. The problem is I'll be like moving on to the next product. And I'm like, I need to just take a step back and look at that. I'm like, wow, that was cool that I figured that out. That was good. Got to celebrate that more.
You do. You got to celebrate your victories.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the other items that's on your mind.
Oh yeah, well I'm working on some placement devices. Mostly I like to draw crosshairs on the backside of just about everything I embroider. And so making some templates to make it easier to position and position embroidery or even screen printing, because I use a folding method where I draw my crosshairs on the back of my item and then fold it in half and then lay it down on my hoop that way. So that tends to work for me, but I've never found a good placement device that will let me draw a straight crosshair in the exact location where I want it. So I'm trying to come up with some solutions for that, some reference cards and a tool to help you hoop little items like baby onesies. So I've been doing a lot of research development with a 3D printer. But ultimately, I don't think that those items are going to be 3D printed. What I'm learning from my 3D printing experts is you can make molds with your 3D printer and then you pour resin to make the final product. And it tends to be more durable and it's a lot faster to make. So once you nail down that design, then your production is like a resin pour. So I'm still learning about all of it, but I think that might be the way to go. But it's great to be able to print something and test it. It's like proof of concept. But 3D prints take quite a while to print. Like one of my products that I've been working on is like a four hour print. Wow. I set off something last night, took 8 hours to print. But at least I have something to test with. And then I can get it made some other way. Well, so, yeah.
I mean, I think that technology is just mind-blowing these days.
Amazing.
Like, to be able to do that in your own home. And like to have your prototype basically print it out. And then yes, if you go to someone else to actually produce it after that, but you can like see it, touch it. It's not just a thing on a drawing on a piece of paper or, you know.
Right. Like the little crosshair thing I just 3D printed. It's, well, is it big enough for me to actually get a tip of a pin in the slots that I made? Yes. If not, then I go back to the drawing board and do another print, you know?
Another one, yeah.
So,
well, I think that there's a big need for those things. You know, one of the things I hear as a blanks company owner, especially right now with the supply chain and everything, people don't want to mess up blanks. They want to make sure that the placement is right every time. Mm-hmm. And that's a struggle. Right? Especially when you're dealing with these little bitty baby onesies, sorry, bodysuits, can't say onesies.
Why not?
Because it's Gerber owns that trademark.
Oh.
Bodysuits. Anyway, it's hard when there are little bitty things going on these little bitty bodies. You want to make sure that it's in the perfect spot. And that is it. While sometimes people eye it, you know, it's not something that you can do quickly and easily and make it look like something that you're proud of every time without some time put into it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I love that you're thinking like that. You're I'm assuming you heard that from an audience, or maybe it was just a struggle that you had that you're like, see how I can fix that.
I did when my kids were littler. I mean, I was always doing crazy birthday shirts because it was an opportunity to try out one of my designs. And so I did weird, like my son had his 5 shirt, his 6 shirt, his 7. And he'd tell me, Mom, I want a snake and I want this. And so I'd make, now he's 12, so he's a little too old for the silly birthday shirts. Yes. But I think this is one of my tips too for business owners is, if you're a digitizer or even if you're making, trying to invent a new product that's embroidered, use gift giving as an opportunity to try new things. Yes. So back to your question about how I noticed this as a problem. I mean, I remember doing a birthday crown on a t-shirt and it was like, I mean, it was so bad and it was not salvageable. So I've experienced the struggle firsthand, you know. Yeah.
And sometimes you don't realize it till you take it off the machine and you're like, and that's, you know, a quarter of an inch or half an inch crooked or not centered or whatever. And you're like, okay, so I just took an hour, however long it was, to create this beautiful applique and, you know, embroidered whatever. And now, and sometimes people won't notice, but you do. I do. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I know. And that's like, oh.
It's so frustrating.
It is.
Yeah. Just
be consistent with what you're putting out with that little.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are where my ideas are coming from because I do a lot of embroidery myself. I mean, even now I mostly test stitch a lot of designs, but my daughter just graduated from high school and I did like all of these cute little corduroy bags I got on Amazon and I did all of the college colors where they're going. So like a lot of green and yellow and blue and yellow. And so I did monogrammed bags as gifts, graduation gifts. And actually after doing probably 9 of them, you know, she's like, oh, I got invited to another party. I'm like, oh, okay. I got really good at those, at those bags. But yeah, you learn after you do it quite a bit and placement, not an issue a lot, you know, just because if you do it so much, but when you're starting, it's hard.
Yeah. It is hard. Yep. It's something that you learn with time. And so I like that you mentioned, gift giving as a way to test. What are some other, I guess, suggestions that you might have for people?
Oh, I think the gift giving occasion, your friends and family are going to be like a lot less critical than a customer probably, you know, and they're so touched. And I think that, you know, when you have this so available to you, like you have an embroidery machine in your basement, you have all of these blanks that you know where to go to get good stuff, that you don't see the value of it as much as the person who receives it. You know, and I was always like, well, I can embroider the shirt, but I should also get something else. And it's like, no, that's enough. You know, it's we don't, to value your own work and the time that you're putting into it. And that's a great gift. And that people who you give the gift to are going to be generally very not so picky about it. I mean, there's definitely a limit to that, but they're going to be pretty forgiving about things of imperfections, what you see as imperfections.
Yeah.
So they may not see it at all.
What'd you say?
And
yeah, exactly.
At all.
Exactly. So, I mean, with the holidays, I get started early, you know, knock out the easy ones, you know, like, and then I also repeat ideas a lot. One of my favorite ideas that I made, I wish I could keep doing it because it's such a great gift, is these like technology packs. So you can get them off of Amazon and I would just monogram them and then fill them with like iPhone chargers and adapters and all that kind of stuff. And so I made tech packs for adults love them to put in your work bag. They're great. And so my daughter's going to college next year. My husband, he's a physician and he made her, he's like, I'm going to make her a first aid kit. So he went to Walmart and bought like Tylenol, ibuprofen, thermometer. And I'm like, that is a great embroidered gift. Get a DOP kit off of, you know, a blank supplier and monogram it and then just fill it with all like the basic medications you might need, Benadryl, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yes, that's a really good idea. I love that.
So I think if you think of one good idea, just run with it and make it for everybody.
Yes.
Really good at it.
I'm like, okay, who can I give that to?
Yeah. And I will say my sister-in-law, well, she wasn't my sister-in-law yet. She was my brother's girlfriend, but she made me when I went to college, she made me like a first aid kit And so I did all of the medicine and band-aids and like all of the stuff I wouldn't think about at that time in my life because I, but used like, and it was like all these little things and even like shout wipes were in there. Different type of emergency, but still an emergency nonetheless. But you know, it was like all these little things that as a college student, I wouldn't, or as an 18-year-old going into college, I would have never thought about needing. Right. But I mean, I was in that thing like every day, like, oh, what is this? What is that?
Yeah.
I didn't know I did this, but I do.
Yeah. I was like, I just saw his loot that he bought at Walmart. And I was like, that is genius. Yes. That's my next gift.
Yes.
The tech pack though, like, yes. I actually did something similar for my dad. For Father's Day, I think it was like 2 years ago, he was going out of the country for work a lot. And I had gotten him a little cord pack, but I'd never even like a little, it rolled it all together.
Yeah.
To keep like your cords and your headphones and everything in one spot. And at first he was like, my dad is like the least technical person ever. He's like, I could tell he was like, this is stupid. And then he was like, I can't live without it. Like the first time he traveled, I was like, see, like, yeah. I know you thought it was stupid, but it's nice to have everything in that one little pocket.
The European adapters.
Like, monogram it. So then people are like, this is mine. Or even put like a vinyl sticker that you cut out for them, like with their initials. So people stop stealing your stuff.
Yep.
It's never happened before.
Yeah.
Never These gotten are, chargers that's, stolen.
That's it. These are all my best ideas. You guys have them all.
I love it. You amazing.
Thank
great,
you.
Great ideas.
So what about before we wrap up, do you want to share some of maybe your favorite products or
Yeah, I did write down a few things. And I think my first favorite product is a thread stand for home embroidery machines. I mean, I buy the big spools of thread and you can't get them on a machine. I mean, you could technically, but it takes so much force to get the thread off of it and unwind it that it's just not going to work very well. And even when you're working with special threads like metallics, glow-in-the-dark thread, variegated threads, they work better if you place them further away. And I kind of figured that out on my own. Like, I was really struggling with those big spools of thread. I was like, how do I work with this? Is this only for industrial machines? But so a thread stand, I have three thread stands now for my sewing machine and two different embroidery machines. So what, they're like $12, get a thread stand. And my second favorite product is sticky back stabilizer. I mean, I love the stuff because the spray makes a total mess. And sometimes you have to use it for some reasons, but then somebody, I went into my local sewing machine shop and I wanted a smaller hoop for my embroidery machine. And the lady that was working there, she's like, you don't need me to sell you another hoop. You just need to patch your sticky back stabilizer. And I was like, wait, what? I just didn't get it. So when you rip it out, you know, then you just patch the back with a little piece of extra sticky back stabilizer. So you don't have to rehoop your stabilizer. When you finally exhaust that piece of sticky back, then there's areas around the side, which you never peeled the stuff away. So I cut that away and then I press it so it's nice and flat and I have a whole bag of scraps. So as I'm doing, you know, design after design, I rip it out, patch it, rip it out. And then, so I think sticky back stabilizer and this whole patching system is the way to go if you're using Tearaway.
Yes.
And then my third favorite product I came up with was definitely Embrilliant software. I just love Embrilliant. And for it being, I'm a Mac user, so for it running natively on a Mac, I was using another old version of software. Sorry, my lights just went out. An old version of a software. Got to move. There we go. In order to digitize. And I had to run a PC simulator on my Mac. And it just took up a lot of space. And I didn't like that. So Embrilliance is awesome. And I love the fact that it's modular. So, you know, you can just start with essentials and then kind of add on. And if you really want to learn it, the YouTube videos by Lisa Shaw are awesome. She's a great teacher. And Brian, he does them. He's less bubbly than Lisa, but they really do they're great. And I'm switching all my digitizing now over to Embrilliance, and they are very quick to respond to my questions. And I just really love the software.
Yes. No, it's really good. Lisa's going to be at Everything Embroidery Market as well. Yeah. And her classes always sell out because people, she's a wonderful teacher. She mm-hmm. knows her stuff backwards and forwards.
And we have a very interesting podcast with her as well.
Oh, I'm gonna be like a fangirl.
Listen. No, and she talks about it being native on Mac and versus PC and all of that. Like, really interesting. I'm sure you would absolutely love it, especially given your history, like your background.
Oh, and BX fonts.
Y'all might be like BFF if y'all don't already.
Yep, y'all are gonna
very similar.
Really?
Grounds. Yes.
Yep. Y'all are going to leave EM with a new best friend. So.
Oh, I'm so excited. Yeah, I feel like I know her. I've watched a lot of her videos. So it's, I'm still learning, but being able to create fonts is BX. It's really opening up the world to allow me to create, to be a font publisher.
Yes.
So I love it. I'm excited about it.
Okay. Well, I think we've hit a little past our hour mark. Yeah. I think we could keep going because I love chatting with you.
You're
super interesting to see all of your, how your mind works and all of the things that are going on and how you're juggling it. And I know that all of our attendees are going to just eat it up. They're going to enjoy having you at Everything Embroidery Market. And just a quick plug for that. If you have not signed up yet, please do. You can do so at everythingembroiderymarket.com. And we have a tremendous amount of awesome instructors, just like Julie, again, Lisa Shaw, Erin Montgomery, Cassidy, just so many things ranging anywhere from business to beginner, things that are for seasoned business owners, screen prints, white toner printers, all that kind of stuff. We have a class for you and we'd love to have you there. Like to personally invite you to come and just enjoy a weekend full of shopping, learning, networking, and just all things garment decorating. So again, sign up at Everything Embroidery Market. And Julie, if you don't mind just sharing with people where they can find you.
Yeah, you can just find me on my website, www.machineembroiderygeek.com, and you can reach me by just writing to hello@machineembroiderygeek.com. That's the easiest thing to remember.
Hey, well, we really had a wonderful time chatting with you, Ms. Julie.
Me too.
Thank you so much for coming. And
all right.
We cannot wait to see you in Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, see you then, guys. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.